Well, the Sri Lankan crisis is the most dire crisis that Sri Lanka has faced in its almost 75 years of independence. I would refer to the crisis as an acute crisis of governance, which has the political dimension as well as the economic dimension. This crisis is not one of recent vintage, in that it is an accumulation of bad governance since independence, which has been brought to a crescendo, if you like, by the Rajapaksas because of their lack of capacity to govern, their corruption, mismanagement, and bad decision-making. The problem is that Sri Lankan governments have treated their citizens as voters and made to them promises which they could not fulfill. As a consequence, we have got ourselves into greater and greater debt. We have a public service of 1.5 million people for a population of almost 22 million. We have subsidized everything from health, education, to electricity. We have also state-owned enterprises which are making losses of millions by the day. All of this was brought to a head when former President Gotabaya Rajapaksa took over as president in November 2019. And one of the first things that he did was to cut the tax base. And as a consequence, the treasury lost something like 600 to 800 billion rupees. In addition to that, he also decided to move towards organic fertilizer for agriculture overnight. The decision in itself was a good one, but you could not do it overnight. And as a consequence, agriculture has been devastatingly affected. And as a consequence, we also have the failure of the food crops and acute food shortage as well. The third thing that he did was he obstinately refused to go to the International Monetary Fund as the international lender of last resort. When people warned about the impending crisis, gathering storm, as it were, we dipped into, not quite dipped into, we dug into our foreign exchange reserves. And as a consequence, today, we don't have any foreign exchange reserves. We paid off our international sovereign bond holders, as opposed to keeping those foreign exchange reserves to spend on imports for essential items. As a consequence of which, we have a serious fuel shortage, cooking gas, drugs, and food. Transport costs have spiraled. Inflation is out of control, and the exchange rate has nosedived. Gotabaya Rajapaksa was essentially not a politician. He was a military man who was the Secretary of Defense under his brother Mahinda Rajapaksa when the war was won in 2009. So he had no empathy, if you like, for the concerns of the people. He had a technocratic bent of mind. And as a consequence, he isolated himself in the presidency. He therefore gave rise to the popular demonstration against the Rajapaksas as a family and against the corruption and the looting of the treasury that had happened with Mahinda Rajapaksa, his elder brother, but had continued in his 3 years of the presidency as well. Now, the Aragalaya, or the struggle, as we called the demonstrations, are interesting because they don't have a single leadership. They are a conglomeration of various groups, some with political affiliation from the left to the right, others community groups, who all came together with one single demand, and that was that Gotabaya Rajapaksa should go home. Gotha go was the cry. In addition to that, they came out with the argument that the 225 members of parliament representing the political order, that they too were corrupt, and therefore they should go home as well. Now, they managed to get Mahinda Rajapaksa out. They managed to get Gotabaya Rajapaksa out. And in that sense, their initial demands have succeeded, except, of course, the 225 members of parliament. In 2019, Gotabaya Rajapaksa won the presidency by 6.9 million votes. In August 2020, at a general election, his party, the SLPP, or the Sri Lanka Podujana Peramuna, won almost a two-thirds majority in parliament. Those two mandates, the argument goes, have been lost. And therefore, whilst parliament might be the legal entity and following the constitutional processes in the current context might be legal, they lack legitimacy. So there is therefore that tussle between legality and legitimacy. The constitution says that the president can dissolve parliament 2.5 years before it fulfills its full term. So therefore, next year, February, March, the president can dissolve parliament. In the meantime, parliament can vote by a two-thirds majority to request the president to dissolve parliament. Now, both of these things are very unlikely to happen because the SLPP majority will not come back into parliament. And as far as Mr. Wickremesinghe, the current president, is concerned, he would want to see the economy showing very definite signs of coming out of the dire crisis that it is in. Mr. Wickremesinghe has been prime minister for 6 times. He has never won the presidency. When Gotabaya Rajapaksa was kicked out and fled the country, Ranil Wickremesinghe became president because the constitutional provisions are that when the president leaves office in midterm, the prime minister becomes president for a period of 30 days, during which parliament selects one of their own to serve out the unexpired years of that term. Ranil Wickremesinghe is in parliament in a rather odd way. At the elections in August 2020, his party was badly defeated. They did not win a seat. But the Sri Lankan electoral system provides bonus seats on the PR list, two parties, and the United National Party, which is Ranil Wickremesinghe's party, was granted one seat. 10 months into parliament, they nominated Ranil Wickremesinghe to that seat. So he is president without support of his party in parliament because they only have one member in parliament. Now, the issue that faces Ranil Wickremesinghe, of course, is on the immediate economic front. The getting of the bridging finance to see us through the period before we sign up the staff level agreement with the IMF and we go to the proper debt restructuring agreement with them. We have been assisted by India, who has given us something like $4 billion. We've been assisted by the US, by China to a certain extent, by other friendly countries to tide us over this period. We need a lot more to get back to any sense of normalcy. Wickremesinghe says he's focusing on the economy. But the arguments of the Aragalaya were of regime change, Gotha go home, get the Rajapaksas out, get them to return the money that they stole. Regime change to facilitate systemic change. That is the argument of a new constitution, the abolition of the executive presidency, where all power is concentrated in that office, in the hands of a single man or woman, and other liberal reforms to the electoral system and the system of governance. Mr. Wickremasinghe seems to be acknowledging it, but at the same time, he's not focusing on it. He has said that he will focus entirely on the economy, and the opposition parties say that they will support the government for whatever it does on the economy. On the political front, though, and this is key, they will not join government because they say the government must come out with a guideline or a timetable by which the executive presidency will be abolished, and also give a definite date for when the next general election is going to be, neither of which Mr. Wickremasinghe seems interested in. But more to the point, on the human rights front, on the civil and political rights front, he has launched a major counterattack against the Argalea or the struggle. Mr. Wickremasinghe wants to identify a good Argalea and a bad Argalea. The good Argalea was the one that initially came out and asked for Gotha to go. It was flat. It didn't have a leadership. As such, there were various groups that were involved. It was very non-sexist, non-ageist. They looked up, they, you know, respected LGBTQI rights. There was no ethnic or religious or political differentiation or discrimination. It was almost a vision of what Sri Lanka should be like. But as it has gone on, and as it's the state has used violence against it, the more politically conscious and oriented factions of the Argalea have come to the fore. They are the ones who took over the presidential secretariat, the president's residence, the prime minister's residence, the prime ministerial secretariat, and they even threatened to march against parliament. But they did not really use violence. Mr. Wickremasinghe has come out against them and said that they are fascist, that they are terrorists. He's used the Draconian Prevention of Terrorism Act to take in quite a few of those leaders. And what bewilders some people, indeed including myself, is why is he doing this when in another 12 days or 15 days' time, the UN Human Rights Council will be meeting in Geneva, and there is a resolution on Sri Lanka that will be brought in this session. Surely he realizes that the Western countries, who are generally perceived to be supportive of him, are going to come up with serious language and condemnation of the use of this draconian act. When he was in government and prime minister within 2015 to 2019, there was a promise that there would be a moratorium on the use of the PTA. In Sri Lanka, we have many other laws that can deal with supposed violations of law and order and the public peace. We have the Public Security Ordinance, we have the ICCPR Act, we have the Penal Code, all of that. But he has chosen to use the Prevention of Terrorism Act. Now, the problem here is this, is that by doing that, he's trying to change the narrative to say that there are people who want to take over the state. The counter-argument is that, look, Mr. Wickremasinghe wants to send out a message to the Sri Lanka People's Party supporters who made him president that he will look after them. He will provide for their security. Some 70-odd houses of theirs have been burnt, that he will take care of them, and that he will act tough in a way that Gotabe Rajapaksa, surprisingly, did not. Yeah. So his ability to maintain law and order compromises his position as the great reconciler who is going to bring the country together to address the economic problems that we face. What Sri Lanka needs at the moment, I would argue, is a government that is trusted by its people, who they have confidence in, who will communicate to them and take them along with them, because as the president says, and as a number of us believe, it will probably get worse before it gets better. We need assistance, we need economic assistance, but I think in the international fora and bilaterally too, Sri Lanka's friends, including Australia, must firmly intimate to the government that the use of the Prevention of Terrorism Act and the clamping down on dissent must stop. Now, that's only dividing the country and making it a lot worse for a government to take us through the economic crisis into a pathway to prosperity. Thank you.